Hello everybody, thank you for listening again to my podcast. My name is Flash, and I invited, as I promised last week, the Go Mode podcast team. The Go Mode podcast is a podcast talking about Zelda, A Link to the Past randomizers, and its speedruns, because, you know, randomizers nowadays are a lot filled with races and speedruns. So we talked a bunch about how randomizers developed over time, what a randomizer is, what Zelda A Link to the Past randomizers are, why they are so, you know, popular and competitive, and, you know, the bare basics of randomizers. If you haven't watched or played a randomizer, or especially a Zelda A Link to the Past randomizer yourself, some stuff may sound confusing to you, but these episodes, we have recorded two, the other one will release next week. These episodes are there to spark the interest of yours to play randomizers yourself, or, you know, at least to educate on why randomizers are so amazing in the speedrun scene and why they are, you know, so popular. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and I hope after listening to this, you will pick up a randomizer yourself, or yeah, you will just enjoy watching races, because random races are something special, I can guarantee you that. And yeah, now have fun with the episode. Hello everybody, welcome to another Speedrun Education podcast episode. Today I have a special episode, as you may see already. I have not only one guest or two guests, but I have three guests. So yeah, today I interviewed the Go Mode podcast team, so let's introduce yourself and who you are.
Hello, everybody. my name is Timp. I'm just going to jump right in there and lead this charge. My name's Timp, and I started the Go Mode podcast along with Herfy Durfy, who's here on the call, and another guy by the name Axial, then later Dante joined us. But we are three guys who talk about Link to the Past randomizer every 2 weeks. Talking about the game itself and like tips on how to, you know, get better at the game, and also talking about the community and tournaments and things like that that are going on. So I got into rando about, you know, 3-ish years ago, and in the summer of 2018, just kind of had this idea at work one day, like, there should be a podcast about this. I think there would be stuff to talk about. And you know, approached Herf and asked about it, and it got started from there. And it's been just a little over 2 years since I did that. But like I said, my name's Timp. I really hadn't done anything else in the community before this, just kind of jumped right into this. And I'll pass it over to my co-hosts and let them talk about themselves a little bit.
Yo, I am Dancy. Timp was saying, I got brought on when Axial departed from the show. I've been in the Link to the Past randomizer community probably since I think spring 2018 is when I started really getting involved. Currently, you know, participating in pretty much every tournament that crops up. And on top of that, we're also doing the competitive ladder. I guess in addition, one of the racing council leaders, which is a group of folks that basically if rules get voted on. It sounds much more complicated than it really is. But yeah, like if there's some new tech that crops up, we are, you know, the group that kind of discusses, should this be made legal for competitive racing in like a minor, in a way, glitch logic.
Dante's also really active in the dance game community, rhythm game community. We love to talk about that.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, so I guess I'm the last one here. My name is Herfy Durfy. I started this out with Timp, as he said in the beginning. He just approached me one day and said, hey, listen, I have this idea for a podcast about A Link to the Past randomizer. I see that you're relatively active in the community and you've been around for a while and you know some stuff. How do you feel about joining me on this? And I said, sure, let's give it a try. Why not? And we've been doing it for quite some time now.
Yeah.
I'm not really super active in the player scene anymore, but I do admin a whole bunch of different stuff. I admin different tournaments. I admin the ladder together with the guy who made it, Big Dunka, and various other, you know, community admin and kind of deals. That's what I do.
Mm. Yo, no, when I first like saw your podcast, I think I just browsed randomly. When I started my podcast or thought about my podcast, I just browsed through the speedrun.com podcast section. And then I saw your podcast and was like, is there really enough to cover in a Link to the Past randomizer on its own to be an entire podcast? because, you know, it sounds kind of absurd, like, to just do that. And then, you know, I look more into it and be like, yeah, randomizers are quite complex, especially Link to the Past nowadays. It's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, community. So this is what we're going to talk about today. But first, before we going to go deeper into Link to the Past or specific stuff we want to cover today, let's talk about what a randomizer is in general and what sets it apart from, like, regular speedruns, because there are quite some differences that makes it, in my opinion, much more interesting to race or to run than regular speedruns.
I would love to answer this question, but I feel like I would kind of ramble if anyone else wants to take a stab first.
I think the best way to describe any randomizer, whether it be Link to the Past, I know Zooter, Ocarina of Time randomizer is another really popular one, just any randomizer in general, Final Fantasy, any of those. When you do a speedrun, you know, I've started getting into doing actual vanilla speedruns of Link to the Past occasionally, basically from that same vein of playing the randomizer. The idea to me is once you have a route for a speedrun, you're kind of on rails, so to speak. Your goal is to go through one specific way and you want to achieve. Now, obviously, there is RNG, but you want to achieve the exact same most optimal play every single time. With the randomizer, you never really know what your equipment's going to be when you get to a specific spot. You can kind of predict what you're going to have based on how the game locks you out from that area. But otherwise, you kind of have to think on your feet a lot, so to speak. You have to really know the game in and out, I think. That's the main difference to me.
Yeah. I think for me personally, a big difference is, or a big explanation for its popularity is, if you think, for example, about A Link to the Past randomizer. A Link to the Past in the speedrun scene, if you look at the NMG speedruns, it's a pretty popular category. There's a lot of runners who run NMG. So the game in general is a pretty popular game to speedrun, and it also has a lot of nostalgia because a lot of people played it and loved the game.
Yeah.
And the randomizer, I think for me, the easiest way to explain it is it adds a puzzle element to the whole thing. Where it's, you know, usually when you play the NMG speedrun, you know you can skip the chest in Link's house because it'll have the lamp, and if you don't get it there, you'll get it in Zelda's cell. But in the randomizer, if you skip the chest in Link's house, you miss some important item maybe, and then you can't finish your seed. So, you know, that's really the main difference and what kind of explains the popularity and the longevity for it.
I think another really striking difference between a normal speedrun and, you know, getting really good at randomizer and getting competitive with that is that there, and this really surprised me when I first started in the community, no one really cares about times really at all. Like, there's no, like, world record. I assume there is, but, like, I don't know who has it. No one really talks about it.
Yeah.
People kind of track their PBs maybe, but I know even that is not really that important to people. Because every seed's different. It's really hard to measure what's good and what's not just by, like, you throwing a time out there. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's such a competitive community, because one of the ways to kind of test your mettle and see how good you are is going head-to-head against somebody else and seeing if you were better at it than they were. Yeah. So we're always doing these tournaments to try to figure out who are the two best people who think on their feet the most and what will happen if they do, you know, 3 or 5 races, who's going to win the most of them. That's kind of how we decide who's the best, I think, in our community.
Yeah, no, this is, this is like what I love and like about, like, all what you said is what I love and like about randomizers. This, like, extra puzzle element, because normally when you speedrun a game, you just follow this clear route and everyone is following this clear route on some level. But in a randomizer, everybody has their personal preference, like what they like to do, what they don't like to do. And it really comes down to who's good at most stuff and who's really consistent with that stuff. But still, you need to understand the puzzle logic of a game. And that's, like, what I really like about, because you can do it over and over and over and it's never really going to be boring because, you know, you have to do something crazy you never had to do before sometimes. So I think we already covered, like, the next point, like, why is it so competitive? Let's talk a little bit more about, like, what the competitive, or, like, what competitive scenes around the randomizers are, because there's, like, tournaments or ladders, but let's explain what those are or what those are generally about.
All right, I guess I'll start out, since I'm an admin on the ladder, I guess I'll start out explaining kind of what the ladder is. The ladder is a concept that Big Dunka thought up on his own, kind of. He thought about how to make competing in A Link to the Past easier and more exciting and move away from what we had before, which were big races on SRL that had like anywhere from 5 to 50 people, sometimes in qualifier races or sometimes over 100 people racing each other at the same time. And it's kind of hard to really tell how well you're doing when you're coming in 29th out of 60. And
yeah,
you're like, all right, I guess I'm right in the middle, so I'm okay, I guess. But you can't really ever say, you know, I won or I lost or something like that. So what Danke wanted to do is he wanted to create a 1v1 environment where people will be racing just against one other person with the same seed. So it's always a one person racing against one other person matchup. And the idea is you never know who your opponent is until your race is finished. You only know that you're racing against someone roughly on your same skill level. It works on the ELO rating that you also have in like League of Legends, I think, uses ELO and a couple other games. So it gives you, if you win, you get some ranking points. And if you lose some ranking points and you move up and down the ladder and it tries to match you up to people around the same skill level as you. And it works in seasons. Every season is, I think, 6 weeks long. And then at the end of the season, you have, you know, a champion of the overall season who got number one, and then split up into the different modes that we have, since there's now a couple of different modes that you can run in Link to the Past Randomizer, you know, with open and inverted and all the different stuff that there is. So that's kind of how the ladder works. And it's been pretty popular. It all works over Discord, which makes it extremely easy to access compared to SRL, which, you know, if you're younger or you've never used IRC before, it can be extremely confusing to know what the heck you even have to do to get a race started or join one. So if everything just works over Discord, you know how to work that. It's like, it works pretty flawlessly.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the biggest issues, and something we talked about a lot near the beginning of the life of the podcast was not just how to get good at the game and play that, but like how to even get engaged, because you have to figure out how to stream. You know, if you're not using an emulator, you need to figure out how to capture that, and so that, you know, you're live and when you're racing against people, and you have to figure out the IRC and just all of these things. And a lot of the, you know, getting people into the game is about like overcoming a lot of these tech obstacles. And I think the community's done a really good job over the past couple years of, you know, from their side, from the server side, like bridging that gap and making it easier to get involved and get started into it. Certainly more than it was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, so what I really like about Ladder, like when I joined Ladder first, obviously I'm like much weaker player than, you know, the average, I would say. But after you did a few races, you probably get matched up against people who are as good as you and who you can beat. So I was like really, really happy after I like lost 3, 4, or 5 times that I got my first win somehow. I was like, yes, I finally did it. I got to the point where I can beat people, and I actually managed to, you know, play a seat pretty well. So this is like the cool part about Ladder, I think, that, you know, there are different groups of people who are as good as you are. So you don't need to be one of the top people. That's also like one thing I like about randomizers and why I think Ladder is so cool, because like in most speedruns there are like only a handful of people, maybe 2 or 3, who can even compete for world record depending obviously on the game. But I think in randomizers, or especially in Link to the Past randomizers, you see there are like, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 people who can probably beat each other on like the topest level if they get really a really good run going. That's like what I really like about this competitiveness of randomizers, because it's not, you never can guess who's going to win, especially in the more complex modes like entrance randomizer or something. It's like really difficult to even guess who's ahead at the moment. So we already covered a bunch of things nobody doesn't know about right now, but we will cover that. So what is like, where can people like get involved into randomizer? Where can they start? Where can they play it? How can they play it? What they need to know? Because when I did my first Link to the Past randomizer run, I couldn't even finish it like in a reasonable amount of time. I didn't even know where all the locations are. So I felt really, really lost. And I don't know how often people feel lost nowadays, so maybe we cover that next.
Yeah. So probably the first thing, you know, if you just want to dive right in, you don't want to, you know, join any extra discords. If you just go to alttpr.com, that is the website you can generate randomizers from for a Link to the Past randomizer. Obviously, you have to upload the ROM of your legally owned version of the Japanese 1.0 Zelda 3 or Link to the Past, as we call it. And once you've done that, then basically that website is a patcher, and it will patch your ROM to give you a seed with randomized items. So you can change all your settings on there. You can make it as easy or as hard as you would like. There's, you know, there's presets as well. So if you're like, oh man, these settings are kind of overwhelming, all you've got to do is really, you know, click on kind of like the standard presets. It's kind of hard to describe, I guess, in a way. It's just more of a, once you get in and get past the upload, you know, your version of the game, then all the options are there for you. And there are presets that you can just kind of pick from a drop-down menu. Mm-hmm. And it's super simple after that. The idea, you know, you were talking about it being something that, you know, if you're very new to it, it could take quite a while to finish. You definitely can create ones with spoiler logs, too. So race ROMs, it gives you the option for a regular ROM or a race ROM. And the race ROMs are encrypted. They do not give any form of a spoiler log. The regular ROMs, however, do give you a spoiler log. So if you get stuck, and that's where I would advise people to generate ROMs seeds from to begin with. If we do that, then you'd be able to see, hey, I got stuck. What do I need to do? Oh, there's my item that, you know, if I go here next, it'll actually progress for me. And, you know, kind of going in on top of that, tracking. So I use that word, and to explain that, there are programs, one very popular one, I think it's Emo Tracker. You can go to emotracker.com, I think, or it's .net, one or the other. That has like an interactive map. Most of the trackers now have an interactive map. So when you click on an item, like let's say you find the hookshot. When you click the hookshot, if any new available checks open up to you, they'll light up on your tracker for you to let you know, hey, these are available. And it's a great resource, but if you don't know where those checks are in the game, that's where the game knowledge comes in. You're still going to be a little, you know, slow or have trouble getting to those areas. Like, where's that at? So that's where, you know, it's kind of like an assisted tool to help you get that game knowledge. And, you know, even some of the most experienced players now still use a map tracker just kind of as like a failsafe.
Yeah. And to build off of that answer from Dante as far as how to get involved, I think before you even play, you can just download it, patch it, and play it, you know, on your own, kind of like it's an adventure game. But if you want to get good at the game and competitive and race against people, kind of, you know, become a part of the community, I think before you even play your first seed, I would definitely recommend watching other people play. And I think that's kind of how all of us got involved.
Yeah.
I know for me on YouTube, I was watching uploads from the 2017 fall tournament, I think it was, or maybe in the summer tournament. And I would just watch like one a day. Like I like fell in love with it. And I think that happens with a lot of people. Like you watch it and it's really interesting and engaging to watch, especially when you have commentators that are describing the context of what's going on. Like you, when you watch enough races and commentators are talking over it, you know, that is kind of how you get your game knowledge. That's where you figure out, okay, you know, when somebody says, you know, K45, they're talking about this chest that's right here. And now I know that. If you try to play before you know that sort of stuff, it can be pretty daunting. It can be hard to finish a seed for sure. Mm-hmm. So watching the game, I think, is a huge part of learning how to get involved.
I mean, that's like, to be honest, it's like funny that you say that, because like I think in general speedrunning is sometimes 90% of the people only watched first before they got, you know, involved themselves into speedrunning. So as you see, the same rules principles apply to randomizer. And go download like a map tracker, because the first time I did a run without a map tracker was without a map tracker, and I didn't know so many locations, and I just, you know, locked myself out of locations because I didn't even know that they existed. So
yeah
it can be really really difficult and frustrating, but once you understood like where everything is and how to get there, it's like it gets really simple, and then the real fun starts, because then like stuff like logic or things like where can I go next are the things you think about and not like, oh, what areas do I still need to check? So let's talk about like what logic is and like how the basic principles of that work before we jump into like, you know, other basic knowledge. Because mm-hmm. I think logic is still a term that maybe a lot of people don't know about, but it's like somewhat you need to know in any randomizer, basically.
Yeah. So the beautiful thing about this game is that, you know, it does randomize all of the items. And there's 216 different item locations and items that are in the game. If it were to just take all of them and put them arbitrarily across the world, there's no way that you would have a guarantee that you could beat the game without doing some really major glitching and moving through walls and doing stuff you're not supposed to do or not allowed to do under racing rules. So the beauty of this game is when it randomizes the items, it's checking all of the different layers to make sure that it never asks you to do something that you can't do with the items that it has made available to you before that point. Mm-hmm. So the game, in other words, the game is always beatable. And the logic is what dictates, you know, what items get put where, ensuring that the game is still beatable. So sometimes that means you luck out and everything you need is just very linear from dungeon to dungeon, and you beat the game in an hour and 15 minutes and it was super easy. Sometimes you get the exact opposite, where the item that you need is all the way across the world and it's the last thing that you check, and the game asks you to beat a boss with, you know, a fighter sword and almost no equipment, and suddenly you're playing a much, much harder video game, and it's the exact same mm-hmm. game that you just played with your last seed. So the logic is, I think, the core essence of what makes this game so fun, in that it's always going to give you a unique experience. It could be difficult, it could be hard, it could be something you have to gamble on, it could be straightforward, but it's that not knowing, it's the randomness there that I think, you know, is another thing that attracts a lot of people to this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
I don't remember what the question was, but yeah.
No, I think you answered it good enough that like what logic is. But so just like, yeah, the logic is basically what the I'm bad at explaining, but
it's like an algorithm.
Yeah,
One way of looking at it is, and this is how, you know, we talked about the puzzle aspect of it, and kind of elaborating on that logic. You know, we've talked about this before, where the game is one huge puzzle, but then every dungeon inside the game is kind of its own mini basic puzzle as well. Like, it's like a puzzle within a puzzle.
Yeah.
So, because there's key logic. Now, what's cool about key logic, and I won't go too deep into this, but I'll at least, you know, kind of, since we're on the subject of logic, the way that's programmed is it's programmed where you will always, it expects you to use your keys in the dumbest way possible. And I say that so, like, that's the best way to describe it. It makes it where if you do something really stupid, there's going to be another key available to you. So you're not like, you're not locked. It's not like, well, I did a stupid thing and now I can't beat my game.
So it has to be beatable. That's right. Yeah, always has to be. Yeah.
And you can bypass that with glitches, but this is like for the quote unquote no glitches category. You can still do stupid stuff if you know, if you do stupid things, you get stupid results. But, but the idea is, if you are just like walking around opening doors, like if it's my first seed and I don't know that, hey, I don't ever need to open this door over here, but I open it anyway, well, I wasted a key, but there's going to be another one available. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a failsafe, if you want to use that word, where the game, like Temp was saying, is going to be beatable all the time. There's no potential for you to lock yourself out of the rest of the game, or you have to delete your save file and start over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but yeah, I don't know what to say really, but that's describing it. Like it puts everything in the right order that you can still beat it, but it's still sometimes not really that straightforward. Like I had seeds where I played through it and, you know, every time I got a new item, it felt like a clear path I have to walk. And that was like an easy seed. But then I got mm-hmm. a seed where I checked basically everything just to get like on the purple chest, the hammer that I needed to get back into Dark Palace. And it was a total mess. And I finished after like 2 hours or something. And
yeah, just because you can beat the game doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
Yeah, or nice, yeah. Or the game is going to be friendly with you. So that's like the concept of like logic, that it, you know, allows you always to beat the game, but not being always the nicest to you. So other basic knowledge of what else, like, okay, so now I have downloaded the game, or like I've downloaded a ROM, a randomized ROM. I have like my emulator or my console, and I have like a tracker, and now I just want to play. So what else, or like how should I really learn the game? What else is there to learn? Like, yeah, go in, because I think a lot of people underestimate how complex it can get, and that you not only need to, like, you know how to play the game, or know how to play the game fast. There's like much more to it, especially like in a randomizer.
So I think personally, there's a couple of different ways to go about it. The first I would suggest is on the ALTTPR page that Dante mentioned earlier. There's a section, I think it's under the help section, that's named Beginner Gotchas, that lists a couple of things, you know, like five or six or so things that get everyone when they start playing a randomizer. One that comes to mind is in the Dark World, to the west of where the Witch's Hut normally is. You can cross over there with the hookshot, and not a lot of people know that, despite there being a little arrow in the grass and stuff like that. But then people don't know, you know, even though their map tracker shows, hey, you can clear the Village of Outcasts to the west, nobody knows how to get to the west of the world. And that's a couple of the first things that you should check out. Then there's a lot of good resources on the main ALTTPR Discord. They have a channel full of resources. I don't really want to get into Discords too much, because the community has like a million Discords that are all pretty good, and they're all helpful in different ways. So I'll just stick to the main Discord, and they've got the training room, which is where a lot of people can help you out with any question that you have. And really, it might feel like that, but no question is too stupid. Believe me, everyone has started out at some point and made the exact same mistakes. So ask whatever you need to ask. There's also a Let's Play channel where you can get help while you're playing a seed. So if you're stuck somewhere, you don't know where to go, you can be like, hey, listen, here's a screenshot of my tracker. How, you know, what should I do next? And people can give you some tips or hints. And personally, after a while, after you get used to the game and you kind of know what you're doing, I think the best way to improve is to race against other people, even if you're losing. Because if you lose by, say, half an hour, then you have someone who played the same seed as you did, but you can watch them, and you can see exactly where they did things differently and how they did things maybe a little quicker or a little better than you did. You know, what did they do differently? Maybe they routed differently. Maybe it's execution during the boss fights that you need to practice. Maybe it's, you know, something completely different. Maybe you approach the seed wrong, something like that. But learning from other people and how they played the seed is probably the most effective way of learning, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being able to watch a side-by-side of what you do versus what someone else did with the exact same seed is really, really helpful. I will, if I may, do just like a shameless self-plug for a moment. I mean, the reason that we started our own podcast was to try to help make the transition from just being a casual fan of this game to actually playing it and wanting to improve and get better, to make that easier. So at this point, I mean, we've done, as of right now, 56 episodes, and we've talked about all kinds of different topics, specific dungeons, glitches. We have an episode that's all about the top 10 things that you should learn if you're getting started with the game. So we've done our best to try to help, you know, get people into the community. And also, as a result of that, our Discord is a really, really helpful place. Like Herf said, there's a million of them out there, but I would be remiss if I didn't at least kind of shout out our own Discord, because it really is. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, we started it or whatever, but the people in it are just super helpful and open. And we also have a learning channel where you can talk about stuff that you want to try to get better at. And like Herf said, there's no bad questions or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think our community is great for that. And I think also generally, to just add one more kind of thought to it, I would definitely pay attention to some of the stronger runners that are in the community and watch them play. And even, again, just like from watching, you will see the kind of glitches that they do and the decisions that they make, and it literally can kind of just rub off on you. Some of them are not difficult. It's just you didn't think to do them until you saw someone else do it. And now you can start to incorporate that into your own runs whenever the situation calls for it. So I definitely recommend watching, you know, people who are really good. And to find out who those are, I would say, you know, tournament, you know, anyone who's in the bracket of any of our community tournaments,
probably
you can go to the ladder. Yeah, exactly. You can go to the ladder website and check out the top, you know, really 50, you know, of any of those categories. They probably have things to teach you, but that's a really good way to get better at the game, I think.
Yeah, no, one thing I want to point out, because you mentioned glitches, there are still glitches allowed, like minor glitches are still allowed in randomizers, but no major game-breaking glitches that, you know, trick basically the logic. Like, there are some sequence breaks that trick the logic, but those are allowed, like fake flippers. We can go into those, like, few glitches that are really, really good or essential. But, yeah, honestly, like, most of the glitches I've learned, I've only learned, like, the one you do in Swamp Palace, where you, like, go into underwater, but you're not underwater. Mm-hmm. And Icebreaker I've learned. And, you know, I was like, when I just looked at it, it looked like extremely precise and crazy. Then I looked up a tutorial, and the first time I did it, I felt like, holy shit, it feels like a lot of fun. It's not hard, but it feels like a lot of fun. And then I sat down for 10 another minutes, just did it over and over and over because it was so fun to me. And every time I now do a run, I know I have like the knowledge back in my mind that, hey, if I need to go to Ice Palace, I can just, you know, do Icebreaker and make this entire palace like 10 times easier, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about like glitches and like maybe how to learn them, what are essential glitches. And at which point you maybe can trick the logic if you need to, because there are a few points where you can trick the logic.
I feel like Dante should take this one. Fire answer just lined up, ready to go.
I don't, as far as where to point people to.
Dude, so, your shirt. I just saw your shirt for the first time.
Yeah, I know. I had to do it. So the way I would suggest that to begin with, I'll have to pull the link and we can, you know, you could share it in the description if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll do that.
There's a wiki that has basically tutorials for literally every trick. Like, they're all kind of like listed out. And I have to shout out Trinex, not the boss in Link to the Past, but a community member who used to be part of the Racing Council and put a lot of time and effort into creating this wiki and putting a lot of the legwork in for us. So, you know, it's readily and accessible for newer runners to be, you know, to be able to just go look at it. And we use that, like, sometimes when these new glitches came out, we used it on our podcast, like, to describe them. That's kind of how we did it. I mean, that's the big thing. And I guess one way of looking at glitches is, if you're coming from, let's say, the Link to the Past, like, vanilla speedrun side, everything right now that is allowed in that is allowed in this racing scene for randomizer as well. Mm-hmm. We really finally took our first step into allowing things that no major glitches category of ALTTP didn't allow when we allowed the ones you mentioned, Icebreaker and Diver Down. And we allowed those mainly due to, you know, kind of having some, you know, variety and kind of spice of life type things. You know, if you don't have a hammer, you can't get to that chest over in Ice Palace. But if you go there, you know, without it and use Icebreaker, then you could check that chest. Maybe that does something and helps you read that logic we were talking about earlier. It's not always guaranteed. It could be a trash item. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the risk reward scenario that we have a lot. As far as like practicing glitches though, having those tutorials like that right there, knowing when and when not to use them. That is another big thing we've talked about a lot with our, you know, like our tutorials for our, you know, listeners. Is just because you can do a trick, you don't want to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. So there are situations, I'm kind of blanking on like specific ones to bring up, but you know, just because you can item dash, I guess, like with your hammer, so you go through three or four pots at the same time, just because you can do that, is it worth the time to menuing to the hammer and then waiting for the menu to come out and then hammering it and then going back and menuing to the item you need next? So you have to weigh those options, and that's where, you know, you could tie it into speedrunning too. You want to minimize any downtime, and that's what a lot of the really good runners do. They know, okay, here's how I can use this trick to save maybe a couple of seconds, or maybe I don't use this trick now because I'll lose a couple of seconds if I actually try to utilize it. And that really comes from experience. And to get to a high level in the ALTTPR scene, just because of how many people are in it and how competitive it is. It's kind of a trial and error situation, unfortunately, where you get good at the game and then you are basically, you know, obviously you're guessing where items are, but at the same time, it's like, do I use this trick here? Do I not? And you think on your feet a lot, like I was saying earlier. So it's one of those deals of, can you execute over a full hour and a half, 2 hours with equipment unknown at the time?
I have a great example for what you were talking about that Flesh can maybe relate to. So Icebreaker, I think, is a great example. You said it's a lot of fun to do, and so you try to do it a lot in your seats. But there's probably situations where you could go to Ice Palace, but you don't have a Cane of Samaria.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I can't do Icebreaker. Yeah. Nah, I don't really want to do Ice Palace right now. So you leave all the good items in Ice Palace until you finally find the Cane of Samaria, which probably was in Ice Palace in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a good example of knowing when to do Icebreaker or when to just go, all right, I guess.
That's a perfect example.
No, that was
exactly.
Whenever I did a run, I was like, in the first place, I was scared if I get Samaria before Ice Palace or not. But luckily, most of the time, I got Samaria before Ice Palace, or when I needed to go to Ice Palace, so I just did it. But yeah, that's like a good point I didn't thought about. I actually wanted to ask something, but I totally forgot about it. One thing I always thought about randomizers, or what the core essence of a randomizer is like, you be good at the logic and you understand like the puzzle system of the entire randomizer well. But when I did a few randomizers run, I realized that the more essential time loss compared to the good runners is like execution on like boss fights or just palaces. Like how often I just get like hit in a random palace when a top runner never gets hit there is like already, you know, time losing. And then when I had to do like a seed with 6 HP moth fight or something, I just died to it 2 or 3 times. Hey, I lose there like 5 minutes compared to a good runner, or 10 or even more, you know? So what are like, it's obvious for me what good resources are to practice those things, but maybe our listeners don't know. So how do you practice like those things or even menuing or stuff? Because menuing is like something I was super slow at in the beginning.
With menuing especially, I think that's something you can really only practice by playing more, as stupid as it sounds. But since every time you play a seed, your item layout will be different in the menu, you'll get more practice in each time. One good resource, I guess, is if you have an item tracker up, most of them are laid out the same as the items in the menu are. So if you look at the item tracker before you bring up your menu and check out, okay, I need to go from the bow to the ice rod. So it means I need to press this in this direction when I bring up the menu. And you check that out on your item tracker and then you bring up the menu, you're already kind of mentally prepared of what to do. So that can kind of help. But in general, I think just playing more will help your menu because you'll just get used to where stuff is. So that's as far as menuing goes. As far as execution goes, I think the best thing that you can probably do if you really want to do that is there's a wonderful practice hack that you can download that has a couple of different locations where you can spawn yourself. You can give yourself all the equipment that you want or take away all the equipment that you want. And you can create and load save states. So, you know, a low heart Mothula fight with bad equipment, you can just create a save state when it starts. And you can practice that for an hour if you want to and just, you know, figure out how to best deal with it or until you feel comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And it basically works for every situation in the game. If you want to practice bomb jumps, if you want to practice boss fights, if you want to practice other glitches like Diver Down or Icebreaker that you mentioned, the practice ROM is really an essential kind of tool to practice those specific situations, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So you would say like practice for randomizers, not only just doing randomizers, but as in every or most other speedruns, also putting time outside of like just playing the game or category.
Yeah, if you really want to, you know, be at the top, I would definitely say so. If you're fine with being like an average Joe like me, you know, being in the middle of the pack, I just play whenever I feel like it, and I'm all right. But if you really want to be competitive anywhere, you need to put the time in. And I've seen and noticed a lot of people that have started in randomizers or in the ALTTP randomizer, when they get to a certain level, where they're very good, they'll start running NMG speedruns just to get the execution down for stuff like, you know, quick kills on bosses or things like that. That's really something that they put a lot of time in outside of the randomizer, even though it's the same game, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, the randomizer obviously switches the experience of the game around quite a bit. But when it comes to just individual rooms, you know, a lot of those strats of like the best way to cross from this door to that door are the same in NMG that they are in Rando, no matter how crazy the randomization gets, like that room stays the same. So it's definitely worth it. We did an episode of our show where we talked to an NMG speedrunner named Wayne, and essentially to kind of wrap up what he said in over the course of the episode, or how he summarized it himself, was, you know, learning the NMG run will probably give you like an extra average of 10 minutes on most of your seeds. But then after that, it can almost sometimes have diminishing returns where you're spending more time practicing that than you could say, like, you know, racing and doing, you know, making decisions about the logic and things like that. So it's definitely something, you know, it's a big time investment, but it will almost guaranteed make you better at randomizer for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I think before we go further, we round up the first episode. We're going to record a second one, so stay tuned for that for next week. But yeah, for now, we say goodbye, and yeah, goodbye everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
How's it going?
Hope you enjoyed this episode. After I recorded this episode with these guys, I went directly into a rando myself, tested out a bunch of new rando modes and other randomizers such as Minish Cap Randomizer. So yeah, next week we talk about more in-deep stuff like the different modes and, you know, just more advanced stuff we weren't able to cover in this episode. If you have any questions on how to play a randomizer or where to get started or all the links we've mentioned, I put them down in the description of the Discords and where to play the randomizer. So if you're curious or if you're interested to play a randomizer yourself, go check out the description, and yeah, see you next week. I love you all. Goodbye.